Rifki May, I love you.
Okay. I'm not sure how I got sucked into this, probably because I love Dina. I'm like a girl fan, groupie, you know, one of those. I love listening to you, Dina, every week because I feel like... So I feel very fortunate that I get to hear Reverend Dina Schoonmaker every week. I love how she blends what's going on today in the real world with psychology with a very strong Torah lens. And she brings it right down to our level. She's the real deal. And yet, you'll hear when she speaks, she brings it down in such a relatable, humble, I'm just like one of you guys kind of way. And it makes it really, yeah, really real and easy to learn from you. And I'm so grateful. Okay. I'm going to read the bio and we'll begin. Mrs. Dina Schoonmaker holds a B.E.D. in Tanakh and English from Mechlala College, a master's degree in Jewish history from Torah College. She has been a member of the Mechlala family for over 30 years and an alumni counseling hub for Mechlala graduates. Mrs. Dina Schoonmaker lectures internationally gives Vadim for women live and over Zoom. At the OU, she has presented Shiur Torah New York and the OU Women's Initiative Weekend of Inspiration and Sichos Night Shiur, and most recently has taught a class at the Elite Summer Learning Program. Mrs. Dina Schoonmaker resides in Yerushalayim with her husband, Rosh Hashiva, of Shapel Zeshiva, Dachi Noam, and their children.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. It is such an honor to be here. When Aviva reached out to me, I was scheduled to be here for the 9 days, arriving on Wednesday morning. And Aviva said, can you just come in a day earlier for this? And I'm so happy that I was able to be here. Baruch Hashem. Okay. I have to apologize by saying that I don't even remember if I used the same story to introduce when I was last here. But this is a mashal that has a very big impact on me. I'll preface by saying that as an FFB, do you not hear me well? Okay, maybe I'll change this. Am I too close or too far? Too far, okay. Is this better? Okay. As an FFB, Tisha B'Av was always difficult for me. Connecting to the abstract, to the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, doesn't come so easily for everybody. My husband, as a Rav Balei Tshuva, I was always jealous of the way Balei Tshuva relates to the 9 days and relates to Tisha B'Av. I remember one of my husband's Talmidim told me that mourning the Beis HaMikdash, it was so alive for him that this is a time of terrible mourning. He was once walking in one of the front communities in the New York area, and he sees a Fleishik restaurant that's open in the 9 days, and it says, we have a seal. So he said, wow, what a serious nefesh for Torah, that these people are willing to eat meat at a time when who could eat anything? When you're mourning, he walks down the street and he sees another Fleishik restaurant that says, we're open, we have a seal. He said, unbelievable, mysterious knowledge. By the third time he saw a Fleishik restaurant with a seal, it finally clicked that people are not mourning so much. They're following the rules. And it was very hard for him. And I remember thinking to myself, it's very hard to mourn. It's hard to mourn the loss of something that you never experienced. We don't miss people that we've never met. We don't crave something that we never tasted. And therefore, the difficulty that we have around mourning the korban is very, very real. I remember once thinking, years ago, so sad that I'm not really sad. Then I said, I'm angry that I'm not angry. I'm disappointed that I'm not disappointed. I took that piece of paper, went on and on. I'm devastated that I'm not devastated. I'm mourning my own lack of mourning. And I think that that's the reality for many of us. As Rabbi Danshevsky just said, I love being a student. I love writing notes. The chickens, we're just living in a world of chickens. And it's such a problem for us. So I always try to find some way to connect and to struggle. The mashal that moves me is a mashal of a woman, and this is the one I may have said here before, I don't remember. So mashal of a woman who's married to a very, very, very talented man, who's brilliant, prolific, articulate, and he suffers a stroke. And from that stroke, he loses his ability to talk. He obviously loses the ability to write and to speak and to share ideas. And he's in a rehab center. And they're working on getting him to move his finger. They're working on getting him to say syllables. And the therapists come every day and work with him. And she cheers him on. And she says to him, "That's amazing. You said ba. Now let's say ba ba. You moved your finger. Let's see if you can move two fingers." She spends the whole day cheering him on, his progress. But then at the end of the day, when all the therapists go home and the lights are dim, she sits near his bed and she cries. Ba? For a person who is so articulate? Moving one finger for a person who is so active? She cries and cries. And then, the next morning, when the therapists show up again, she again starts cheerleading. "You're doing great. This is amazing. Progress. Fantastic." The nimshel, I think, is obvious. All year round, we cheer on the Jewish people. More chesed, more Torah. We're doing great. We're building another community, another shul. Amazing. But then once a year, when the lights are dim, we're like that woman who is crying over the loss. This is what our Jewish world is supposed to look like. This is the way the Jewish world is supposed to be. And we sit and we cry. And after Tisha B'Av is over, again we will start cheering on the Jewish people. Because that's what we need to do. When you live in an imperfect world, you need to encourage and build. But once a year, you have to remind yourself that this is not the way it's supposed to be. And that's what Tisha B'Av is all about. So when I think about this, I say, okay, but again, we're crying and mourning about something that we've never seen. If you only met that man after his stroke, you don't even know how articulate and prolific he really is. So how do you connect? And how do you mourn? So, I want to start by saying that Chazal in Sanhedrin Tzadik Ches say that Mashiach is going to come in a generation where there are many, many tzaras, much, much suffering. The Gemara says, tzaras kinahar, it's going to be like a flow. Everywhere you turn, you're hearing about problems. And our mourning comes from the mass amount of information, of difficulty, our own personal difficulty, and the difficulty of many people around us. I sometimes share that one of my children one time had certain skin ailments and stomach aches. I took her to a chrome naturalist in Beit Shemesh, his name is Dr. Avram Gundel, a very special person. And he was giving the professional and the spiritual approach. He asked her, she was a little kid, he asked her, what do you drink every morning at breakfast? So she was so proud to say something healthy. She said, "I drink a cup of natural orange juice." And he said, "That's terrible." And I'm thinking, it's not Coca-Cola. What's so bad? So he starts explaining that the way Hashem made an orange is that you peel it. and you eat a little bit at a time. And as you eat it, your body is integrating the sugar. And usually after an orange, you're not necessarily going to want to have a second orange. But if you do, it takes a while, and you're usually not going to have a third orange. He said that's the way Hashem made your body integrate the natural sugar in the orange. But when you drink a cup of orange juice like this, you're taking many oranges, and your body gets like this sugar rush, even though it's natural. And that's why it's not so good for you. I'm sorry if anybody out there markets orange juice. And then I started thinking that the same is true for information. The way Hashem made us is that we're supposed to integrate information. And when it's an emotional thing, like a loss or a form of suffering, just think of it like in the olden times. You lived in your little town with a certain amount of people, and there was always suffering, a loss, a tragedy. But what was going on in the next community took a horse and buggy and somebody to travel until you heard what was going on in the next community. That took a while. And what was going on overseas? Who knows what you'd ever hear about it. Today we are living in a global village of 8 billion people, and we hear about tragedies all day. Our psyche cannot integrate that amount of suffering. And we're like the rush of orange juice that the body can't handle. We are living in a time of tzaros kinahar. Everywhere you turn, you're hearing about such tragic circumstances. And our very sensitive Jewish souls cannot handle this. And this is where our tzitzis of Yeshua is coming from. We may not understand the Beis HaMikdash. We may not be able to miss something we never experienced. But we know that we are missing something great. And we know that this is not the way it's supposed to be. Our mourning is coming from what isn't, from the terrible reality of where we're living and how we're living now. And we never want to lose our Jewish sensitivity and be able to say, another loss, another situation. No. We need that once a year to cry and say, this is not the way it's supposed to be. And then after Tisha B'Av, we have to keep our families together and we cheer on the Jewish people. Because we have to be happy despite everything that's going on. But we need some place to put all that pain and suffering. And that's what Tisha B'Av is about. So I'd like to say that even though we might not understand what the Beis HaMikdash is, or we may not understand what we're missing, we have to really integrate the fact that Hashem wants to bring us to the ultimate destination, where will be the end of tzaros, the ability to just live with beauty and growth and connection to each other and to Hashem. And this is the time to realize, and it's, I just learned from Rabbi Danishevsky, to protest the fact that it's not supposed to be this way. I think that our suffering is on different levels. We have the suffering of losses, tragedy, sickness, but we also have the tragedy of Jewish separation, of fighting, of lack of Avas Yisrael. This is probably the first time I'm sharing this publicly, but I was walking in Yerushalayim recently, doing an errand. I parked my car. I turned a corner, and there was a group of people there, from people, and there was a group of policemen, and they were standing facing each other in a way that it looked like it was about to erupt into a terrible fight. And ladies, I turned around and I ran for my life. I was shaking just from seeing Jew versus Jew. I couldn't. I gave up my errand. I got into my car and I drove away. Because when you see it, you just can't, you can't live with this. And sometimes it's not as obvious, but unfortunately, in our personal lives, in our community, in our Jewish world, there's so much fighting. And on Tisha B'Av, we cry. We cry over this. And we understand what it must be like for the Rebbe Shlomo to watch his children fighting. If you have kids who are having a hard time getting along, it rips your heart. And this is the concept of the Tsar of the Shechina. On all levels, all year round, Hashem cries for us, Imo Anokhi Vitzara. And on Tisha B'Av, we cry for Hashem. We cry for what His reality is like in our world. I had a very powerful experience. I just arrived from Israel yesterday. And on my way to the airport, a few hours before, I went to visit a friend of mine, a very, very dear person whose name I won't use because she's a very, very tzaddik person. She's a neuropsychologist who is a very, very big tzaddikess and a very brilliant person. She has certain very extreme medical problems that she's been struggling with since she was 13 years old, and she's already an adult, and has to go through many, many painful procedures. She was in a hospital, and she's telling me that before they do incredibly invasive and painful procedure, they use a certain painkiller that's very, 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 very strong. She had a very bad reaction to that painkiller. And they had to just settle the body down. But by the time they actually did the procedure, the painkiller had worn off, and she had to go through the procedure without any painkiller. I said to her, how? How do you manage that level of pain? This is not the first time such a thing happened. She told me something so powerful that the whole time on the plane, I kept repeating these three words to myself. She said, I focused intensely at the moment of my pain. I focused intensely on the pain of the Shechina. And I say to myself, these are three words in Aramaic, L'okmeh Shechinta Me'afra. To pick up the Shechina from the dust. Or we'd say in Hebrew, Hakim Shechina Me'afra. The Shechina, Kivyachol, is in the saddest place, it's in the Afar. And we, when we're in pain, we have the ability to connect to Hashem Kivyachol over His pain and to raise the Shechina up. She says, that's what lets me survive the pain. When I realize Ribono Shel's pain, and I connect to Him over the pain, I feel, she says, this is sources that are based in the Kabbalah, or Paul talks about it, that this is what actually brings the Ke'ula. When you can take your pain and connect to Hashem's pain, you're actually elevating the Shechina and bringing the Ke'ula closer. I said it to myself many times on the plane, L'hakim Shechina Me'afra, to bring the Shechina out. Ladies, this is a big kiddush to me. Why is it a big kiddush? Because often at moments of our pain, we feel disconnected. Disconnected from others who don't know what we're going through, or don't understand, or don't care, or don't sympathize. We also sometimes feel embarrassed and judged by others for our imperfect lives. And we feel upset at Hashem for putting us through this sometimes. What I learned from my dear, dear tzaddikess friend is that pain is a moment of connection. It's a moment when you understand the Rebbe Shlomo's pain and you can connect to Him and try to elevate yourselves and high strength. I'll get back to that at the end in a way that sounds less abstract. But it was very, very powerful to me to hear this concept. And I had the chills when she told it to me, because just a week earlier, somebody told me about somebody she knows who is a Holocaust survivor very special elderly man who was also going through a very painful procedure in the hospital. It was a one-time thing that he had to do. And the doctor said, there's part of this procedure that's going to be very painful. I'm just warning you. So he says to the doctor, can you just give me a 30-second heads up before the most painful part of this procedure so that I'll know it's coming? The doctor agreed and told him. Later, the person who was accompanying him to the procedure said to him, why did you want a 30-second heads up? And he said something unbelievable. This procedure took place in Bellinson Hospital in Israel, where there are many, many Israeli soldiers who are wounded, who have many, many different types of treatments going on. He said, I want to have 30 seconds to tell Hashem that any pain that I am going to experience right now, I want to take away the pain of every hayat in this hospital. If I'm going to be going through so much pain right now, I want to take it away from other people. And I needed 30 seconds to focus on that and to believe that I was able to relieve others of their pain. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. I was blown away by the two stories, but I was thinking about it afterwards. It's sitkus, but it's also a way to manage pain. To say this is not going to break me. This is going to elevate my connection to Hashem and my connection to other people. I'm going to use my pain in the most productive way possible. Please, Hashem, if I have to go through this, take it away from somebody else. And let me connect and let me help bring the geula to my personal pain at this moment. And I think that we have all kinds of personal pain. And sometimes it really schlucks us down. But lahakim shina mi'acha, to use the pain to elevate, that is what we are trying to do. So I would like to address, and in our breakout sessions we'll address this more, the different types of pain that we experience. And if we're living in a world where there's so many tsaros, like the Mahar, flow of tsaros, many of us have things that we go through in life that are very difficult. It's interesting because I've been giving a series since Pesach time about Nisori. And I call the series Life's Challenges, Big and Small. When we think about the word Nisori, we often think about tragic experiences. But really, Chazal are very, very not defining of what Yisur are. In fact, the Maharal says that Yisur is kol davar shekineged ha'adam, nikra Yisur. Anything where you find a challenge, a pushback, is called Yisur. It couldn't be you wanted your day to go a certain way, and you got stuck in a lot of traffic, and that's Yisur. The first thing I learned from this is that Hashem is not judging what you consider difficult. You know, I often say that I learned, one of the main ideas that I'd like to always share is something that I learned in a workshop that I once attended, given by Rabbi Dr. Tversky, famous Rabbi Dr. Avraham Tversky. He said that your primary response is not where you have the fear. When you find something difficult, you say, oh, that's so frustrating, or I'm so upset about this. He said, whatever upset you, wasn't your bechira to say, I think I want to be upset about this now. It comes naturally. Primary responses come not when we're choosing them. Sometimes we feel upset, annoyed, angry, jealous, frustrated. I didn't choose that. That came. He said, your secondary response is where your hero starts. Now that I feel this way, what do I want to do with this feeling? I think this is very important for Jews. I remember him saying, there's a group of women it was a bunch of therapists at this workshop. I'm not a therapist, I'm a chanecha, but I was always a therapist wannabe, so I used to sneak into these workshops. He said, you know what a lot of good Jewish women secondary sponsors? To be upset themselves about their primary spouse. Why are you complaining about this? Life is so hard for so many people. Grow up, stop being immature. Why are you bothered? He said, no. We have to accept the fact that we are sensitive people and things cause us pain. In fact, this is not from Rabbi Dr. Tversky, this is from Rabbi Cook. Cook says that the sensitive Jewish soul, the same soul that's sensitive to ruchnius and sensitive to Torah, is also sensitive to offenses and comments that are made. It's a package deal. He doesn't say grow up and be different. He says, yeah, sensitive people are sensitive. And sometimes things bother us. And as I just learned from Rabbi Danishevsky, the idea is not to ignore the primary response. Hashem, you made me. You made me a sensitive person, and this is hard for me. And we have a proof for this from the Gemara. Because the Gemara in Erechim Tetzvayim says, I hekam tachas ha'yisurim. What is considered yisurim? And the Gemara gives small examples. The famous one is when you put your hands in your pocket and you come out with the wrong change. How can we call that yisurim? So we need to redefine the word yisurim. Yisurim does not mean tragedies. It includes tragedies, but it doesn't exclusively mean tragedies. It means anything that you find difficult is yisurim. Anything that you're finding pushback is yisurim. And yisurim is from the same source as musar. Musar means that it comes to teach me something. And even when you get stuck in traffic or you forget your keys, that's also something that teaches you something. You know, I dealt with this in my mind. We started out in a certain topic with this Gemara and Erechim Tetzvayim. I'm like, what's going on here? The Maharam are outdoing each other about what little inconveniences could be called yisurim. One of them says, if you pour the wrong cup of if you pour the temperature, the water is not the temperature you want it to be when you pour a cup of water. The other one says when you put on a piece of clothing backwards and you have to take it off and put it on. The other one says when you have a piece of clothing sewn for you and it doesn't fit. The other one says when you put your hands in your pocket and they were not very entitled people. And they were not living in 2026. So what do they mean when they call this yisurim? What they meant was not I complain about things because I'm immature. But they meant that these are how little it could be, and I still grew from it. When something didn't go exactly my way, I grew. And they're teaching you that even little things you can grow from. That's what they're telling you. It's not that they were outdoing each other in perfection. It's that they were outdoing each other in mindfulness. Even when something little happens, I can grow from it. Now, I always put things through a psychological sifter before I teach it to women. What am I telling you? Start analyzing every time you forget your keys and start making a big deal about it? No. There's an easy way to look at the small challenges. We're going to get to the big challenges also. The small challenges is when you felt, that was upsetting, that was annoying, even if it was little. And the Gemara, the same Gemara that talks about that list of things that I just mentioned, those little things, also says that if a person has 40 days in his life without yisurim, it's as if he got his own hop in this world. So the way we just define yisurim, you don't even have 40 minutes without these things happening. So for sure you don't have this problem. But what is the purpose? What does it mean to grow? And here, ladies, I think is an important point for us to take home. The way that we grow from small inconveniences and big ones is by knowing that we are only living in the hallway and we have not yet gotten to the palace. Olam hazeh domeh leprozor. And the next world is the world of the tractor. You know, this world, especially in 2026, is trying to convince you that you're living now in the palace. You can have a perfect life. And if you don't think so, just drink Coca-Cola or buy this luxury car, and then you'll have a perfect life. Well, what are you certain coming to teach you? Even the small things that don't go your way. It's coming to remind you that I am in the hallway and I have not yet reached the perfect world. And that is the type of muster where you don't have to start analyzing, where did I go wrong? You just say, right, there's a perfect world coming. We're not there yet. And that alone can calm you down. I have a woman in one of my classes in Yerushalayim. Her husband is a building contractor, and he redesigns people's kitchens and builds houses. He says, you know, every time I start a new job, it's all nice and wonderful. And by the time we get to the end of the project, we're often not friends anymore. And he says, you know why? Because they want the perfect kitchen. He says, but they don't just want the perfect kitchen, they want the perfect life. And they think that getting the perfect kitchen will give them the perfect life, and then they're disappointed, and then they're not happy with me. And I heard this idea from her. I said, oh, now I know where I want to go with this term idea. If you are looking for the perfect chair to design a house, it's never good enough. Everywhere you go, you're going to say, this isn't perfect, this isn't perfect, I'm designing a palace. But when you suddenly get a reframe, and you realize that you're actually designing the waiting room, this chair, that's a really nice chair for waiting room. It's actually a perfect chair for waiting room. It doesn't belong in the palace. That is our lives. We're living our lives in a waiting room. If you think that you've arrived and life has to be perfect, you'll never be happy. And that's why 40 days doesn't go by without things going wrong to remind you, in a nice way, you think this world is good, this is nothing compared to what you want after what you're going to get. You are in the waiting room, and that's a really nice chair for a waiting room. See, pizza of Yeshua, we have to look forward to something. We have to say, no, I'm going to keep on getting reminders that this world is not the place, so that I could stay connected with the fact that we're on a journey, and we're going to get there. And there we're going to have the ultimate satisfaction. So if we use our Yisurim, small ones and big ones, but so far we're only talking about the small ones, if we use them the right way, it keeps us so hopeful. Look how gorgeous this is for a waiting room. It's a gorgeous world, and it's not even as beautiful as it's going to be. And it just keeps you in focus, keeps you optimistic, keeps you hoping, keeps you waiting and yearning. Because the billboards are telling you to yearn for the car. And your imperfect life, even with the car, is reminding you that perfection is not here, it's coming. And hopefully coming very, very soon. So what about the bigger things in life? And at the end of my series, I started saying that I now have a new terminology. There's the Erechin Yisurim, there's the Shabbos Yisurim, and there's the Brachos Yisurim. Three different sources from Chazal. The Erechin Yisurim are those smaller things, like I forgot my keys, I have to go back, reminding me where I'm headed. We then have the Shabbos Yisurim. And those are the ones that I think we're going to deal with a little bit more in our breakout sessions. The Gemara Shabbos Peches talks about interpersonal situations that are yisurim. The Gemara says, "Hane'alavim ve'inam olvim." Those who are offended and hurt by others, but they don't hurt back. Shomim karpasam ve'inam mashivim. They experience their own degradation, and they don't respond. Osim li'ahava. They do this out of love. Usmeichim li'yisurim. That's a hard one. Alei ha'kasid omer. Mark quotes the passage from Yeshua, O Abba, Kitzis Hashem Shukurasa. Those who love Hashem are great and powerful like His Son. Ladies, the Gemara was not written for women. It's gender neutral and mostly learned by men. And yet, emotional offenses are real. The Gemara calls them Yisurim. But this is Yisurim. That means, once again, that we're sensitive. And when someone says something that hurts our feelings, that needs to be understood. That was a pinch. That hurts. The Gemara says that if you can be now of Einam Olden, you don't pay it forward. You know, we have this expression, hurt people hurt people. And sometimes when we experience something, we then just use our tongue to offend somebody else. And even harder to control is not to answer back when somebody hurts you. And the Gemara does not say that this is easy. It tells you that you are like the sun. You light up the world when you don't answer back. Hashem says, you know who really loves me in this world? Those who know how to control their mouth when they're hurt. Because some of us would never initiate an insult. But if people insult us, we know how to get back at them. And the Gemara says this is Yisurim. Part of the Yisurim is not to have the last word. That's Yisurim. And it's hard work. But this is Osi Mi'ava. Ladies, what does it mean Osi Mi'ava? We do it out of love. When I did this source with my students, and I know that for some people in this group this is Chazara because they're part of my vibe and we spent a lot of time on this. You would think that Osi Mi'ava is about Ava Yisrael. I love that person even though they're out of line, but I'll control my mouth. No. All the Mefarshim and Chazal tell you that it's a vertical love. It's your love for Hashem. It's a horizontal situation. Somebody just offended me, but I go vertical. And I say, Hashem sent this situation to me. And therefore, I want to connect to Him over this. Osim Mi'ava. Many sources connect knowing to love. It's hard to love somebody who you don't know. It's hard to love Hashem. How do we know Him? In our last time that I met this beautiful group, we spoke about the Torah Devorah. And we spoke about the fact that Hashem is often in a position where He doesn't answer back. Where people in the world don't do His will. And He is the bigger party. He's a Melech Olam. He allows people to write books about atheism, and He doesn't stop their pen, and He doesn't stop their brain, and He doesn't stop the distribution of the book. And when I am in a position where somebody is doing something that bothers me, and I don't answer, I know Hashem better, because He's living in this world where He's great and capable and able to put everybody in their place, and He doesn't. I have to tell you, ladies, that I had a situation when I was teaching this material where I really didn't answer back, and it was very, very hurtful to me. And later on, I said, I looked up to Shem, and I said, Shem, how do you do this all the time? It's so hard. But I felt closer to Him, because He can help us with about anything. And when I am able to control, I get closer to Him, because He does this all the time. And does it mean to make light of the pain? It means to take the pain and channel it to Lakim Shina Mi'afra. Hashem, your kavod is so in a low place in this world, and now I understand you, Hashem, because my kavod feels not good right now. So I'm going to get down there, and we're going to work together on elevating this world and bringing the Ula. The Hakim Shina Mi'afra, as my friend said. This is what you do when you're in these situations. Bosim mi'ahu. You will increase your love for Hashem and you understand his position. But it also means something else. It means that it's not just my love for him, it's also his love for me. Think about when a parent feels the most love for a child. When a parent is giving a child a candy, okay, that's a nice moment. But when a parent has to hold the child down at a painful procedure and the child is crying, that's when the parent's heart is just overcome with love, is bursting with love for the child. Your most difficult moments are the moments where Hashem's love for you is flowing the most. Because when he gives you the nice things that you want in life, of course he's doing that out of love. But it's a win-win. Feels good for you, feels good for him. You're thanking him. He's the great father. It's all amazing. Thank you, Hashem. Beautiful. Really. But at moments where he's not so popular with you, because he's putting you through a difficult procedure for your good, and he's pinning you down, the way a parent has to pin down a child who needs a painful procedure for their good, that's when the parent is overcome with love. Because it bothers them that they have to be pinning you down. That is when Hashem loves you the most, is in your most difficult moments. But also, we believe that every difficult thing I go through in this world, the payoff in the next world, is more than anything I can imagine. I was thinking about this concept of Osim Mi'ahu. I was reading a mashal that was a cute mashal. I took it into 2026, even though it was probably written a long time ago. If I showed you a picture of somebody who was taking a $100 bill out of your hand, and you only saw the hands, and I said to you, what's the expression on the person who's the money's being taken out of his hand? You'd expect annoyance, sadness. But what if I showed you the picture and you see that the person who the money's being taken out of their hand, that person's smiling? That's so strange. You're taking away my money and I'm smiling? But then we zoom out the picture, and it's an 80% sale in your favorite store. The cashier is taking $100, but you're walking home with tons of merchandise. Ladies, it's hard for us to really relate to this. But any time Hashem takes something away from you in this world, what he's replacing it with in the Olam Ha'emes is much more than anything you can even imagine. So in this world, you feel the pain, and it's real. But you need to believe that what's it's worth over there is like you just got, who knows, I can't even say 80% sale. And that's really a perspective that if we can do that kind of change, we can say this hurts. Because mom, a person in this world, the body and emotions, but somewhere in my brain, I know that whatever that payoff is going to be is something that would make me smile. And you know what? You can cry and smile at the same time. Because sometimes things hurt, but you also can know that somewhere there's a reason for this. It's coming from a loving heart. And that's what Smechem Yisurim is about. Sometimes, if you really know Hashem loves you, you just remain curious as to what the payoff of this thing is going to be. I have a certain child who I've been speaking about in my Bible. He has birthday trauma. His birthday always comes out at times when somehow it never gets celebrated. So he says, you know, I wake up in the morning of the birthday and I expect somebody to call me. And nobody calls. And then it's later on the day, I'm sure they're going to call. And they don't. And then later he's waiting, and he still don't. He says, and then I come back to the house, and the house is dark, and I'm sure that I'm going to flip on the light, and everybody's going to say, surprise! Poor guy. He says, I flip on the light, the house is empty. He's like an apple on the table. He says, it wasn't such a fun surprise. He says to myself, I have to make up his birthday trauma. Bonjour. is never disappointing. If you didn't get what you expected, what you hoped for it, it's because there's a beautiful surprise coming at the end. And when you say, oh, he must be planning something good for me. Human beings can disappoint, but Hashem never disappoints. Just a matter if you'll see it now, in a month, in a year, or whenever you'll see it, or in all matters. But there's a big, big payoff coming. And this is why, this is the reason why I'm talking about this is because the Pitzu Yeshua, yearning for the Kula, you have to connect to something that there is a payoff for this. This is not the perfect world. And that's where I'm going to be. Okay, yes. What do you say? Should we hold the questions or could we take a question now? After, okay? Okay, great. Okay, very good. I want to just get to, how much time do we have? Are we over time already? Or over time? Give me a count. How much longer? Five, 10 minutes? Is that okay? I don't want to cut into people's great time. Okay, I'm going to try to zoom ahead. Okay. Ladies, if we want to use our Yisurim for connection to Hashem and not for separation, I have a very beautiful idea that I'd like to share. It's coming from a man from my community who lost his wife recently at a very young age. And he wrote a little purchase about our responses to pain. He says there's something called Leiv Nishbar and there's something called Atzvos. Leiv Nishbar means a broken heart, and Atzvos means sadness. He says both of them look the same. They're crying, and you're allowed to cry when something is painful. He says, what's the difference? He says, Atzvos is more like anger. It's saying, I'm mad at you. If I tell my children that a big trip that I planned with them was canceled, sorry guys, we're not going, I might have what I call the stomper, which is the kid who gets angry and says, it's not fair, you promised a promise. And then I may have the type, the other child who runs off to his room and cries and is not talking to me. Rav Nachman and the Sefer Mishkatos Nefesh, he says that they're both different forms of being angry at the person. Some people do active, like it's not fair, and some people do passive, they go to their room and they cry. But what is Leiv Nishbar? Leiv Nishbar is I'm crying, but I go back to the mother for a hug. Sometimes when you cancel a plan, one kid is going to stop, another kid is going to go to his room and give you a silent treatment when he cries, and the third is to say, Mommy, can we at least have a really nice dinner tonight? Can we have a nice dessert? Meaning they go back to the source of the difficulty and they try to find comfort with the source. Ladies, this is so important. There's a very beautiful concept, which some say that is even as you said this, some say it was Yom HaJara. Mimecha elecha evrach. I run away from you, Hashem, and who do I run to? I run back to you for comfort. Every time you pick up your sitter to cry about a circumstance in your life that Hashem put there, you're going back to him for comfort. Leiv Nishbar has the same tears, except it's a child who's crying on the mother's shoulder after he heard the news from the mom. Girls, ladies, Tisha B'Av is about connection. You could take your personal sorrows and go cry in your room by yourself, or you could take your personal sorrows and come back to Hashem for a hug. And that is all the difference in the world. We want to use our tzaros to connect back to Hashem. And again, Lahakim Shtinta Me'ukme Shtinta Me'afra. while King Shimon on fire, go back to Hashem and say, Hashem, I'm suffering and you're suffering too. And this is a very, very important piece. I'm going to leave a certain piece for our breakout sessions because A, we don't have time, and B, it connects very well to what we're doing then. So part two will be, I just want to end with one last idea. The Gemara says, in Sanhedrin Tzadik Ches, that Mashiach is going to be a value story. Mashiach doesn't only bring the Geula by announcing the Geula. He also does things to speed up the process and make it happen. There's a certain amount of tikkun that has to be done in the world for Mashiach to come. Certain amount of difficult things, certain amount of skills. And Mashiach takes on our burdens and he suffers because he wants to be able to get to the end of suffering. And if there's any suffering left, he takes it on himself. I have a very dear student in one of my classes who has a very young son who's serving in a very, very difficult unit in the army. And the commander once told her, your son is a very special boy, he's over 19 years old. He said, we do very, very difficult hikes for 10 kilometers in over 100% heat, and the soldiers have to carry very heavy backpacks. When we get to the end of the hike, we notice that your son is not only carrying his own backpack, he's carrying somebody else's as well. She says to me, we're discussing it, he's a special soul, this boy. And he noticed that another boy was not managing that. And he took the backpack of the other person. But there's also another message here. He wanted to get to the end of the hike. And this guy was falling behind. So he took on the backpack so that they could all get there. Mashiach takes on the suffering of some of us so that we can get there already. And I'll just end by saying that some of us have a special neshamas that we take on the suffering of other people. Sometimes you look and you say, where did I go wrong? That everybody is going through this milestone and my kids suffer. This is going easy for everybody and I struggle. And sometimes you feel embarrassed. You don't want to hide your face. You don't want people to notice what's going on in your life because you feel so inadequate that you are not doing so well. This idea is to make you proud. If you're struggling and other people are kind of whizzing through and you're struggling, it's because your neshama decided to carry the backpack of other people to get to the end and to get to the geula. You can hold that package and say, it's not that I'm any worse than anybody else. It's not that I am being punished. It's not that I went wrong, it's that I am carrying the sorrows of others because we all need to get to the finishing line. And as you emerge and raise yourself to the sorrow, you can say, I'm that special neshama that is carrying the backpack of somebody for whom it was too heavy. And I am getting us to the finishing line of the Geula Shleima quicker because of what I'm carrying. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you.